This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2021 special is brought to you by Marsing.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. You're listening to The Property Show on The Morning Run. It's our weekly take on all things property related. I'm Sim Wee Boon. Budget 2021 is scheduled to be tabled later today in the third session of the 14th Parliament 2020. This is going to be a big one, especially given the current political situation and the ailing economy brought about by the COVID-19 pandemic. An important sector that many people will be observing is the property sector and what Budget 2021 might do to address it. So on the show today to discuss with me about that is Siva Shankar, CEO of the real estate agency arm for Rahim & Co. International. Let's start off with a bit of a check-in. How is the property sector doing? What have you observed?
The ministry has released figures for the first half of 2020. And sadly, unfortunately, all sectors of the property market has seen a downturn. Volume went down by close to 30%. Total volume went down by close to 30%. Total value also went down by close to 30%. And every sector in the market, be it residential, commercial, industrial, retail, has seen a bit of a downswing. This was highly unexpected because what we saw in 2018 and 2019, we actually saw the market recover because we've had some bad years. We've had bad years from 2015, 2016, 2017 were negative territory years. And then 2018 and 2019 saw an improvement. So all things being equal, everybody expected the market in 2020 to pick up even further. But unfortunately, that was not to be. Partly because I like to call it a perfect storm. The first one was the oil and gas crunch. The oil and gas sector, you know, saw so much of upheavals that affected Malaysia. And then was our, you know, uniquely funny and strange political situation that caused even more stress to the economy. And last but not least, the mother of all black swan events, which is COVID-19. Which was completely unexpected. And the confluence of these three black swan events, what happened, Sim, is that it caused the market to contract very badly, very quickly.
Okay, well, then let's break it down by sectors first. Let's start with the residential one, the most important, and I'm sure the listeners would really want to know. So what has happened to the residential sector now? Because as you said, the property sector wasn't doing so well. And there's so many issues with the residential sector that it's kind of like have been happening for years. How has this year compounded these factors?
Yeah. Well, the residential sector has been struggling a bit for a few years now. The supply far outstrips demand, as we all know, and there's a huge overhang. Depending on who you talk to and depending on how they measure this overhang, how they define it, the overhang, by my calculations, we've got more than 50,000 units, which are now considered overhang. The overhang is defined as a property that has not been sold 9 months after the project is completed. So on the 9th month onwards, it goes into an overhang sector. But we mustn't look at it so simplistically, because if you got 50,000 units or which are on an overhang, but you got 30,000 units, 35,000 units, which are under construction now, which will at some point in the near future be put back into the market, and many of those would add on to the overhang. Coupled that with thousands and thousands of units which were bought by speculators, greedy speculators, I'd like to call them, with the intention of either putting the property into the market for sale or for rent. When those properties get completed and they get put into the market as well, then I think you're going to see way more than 100,000 units available at any time for sale. And that's very frightening.
So your projection is another 100,000 units coming in the near future?
No, that's not the projection. I'm just saying that if you take all the units that may possibly be put into the market by individual owners, because those units are not considered an overhang, right? An overhang is when the developer doesn't sell the unit. Mm-hmm. But if the developer has sold it to, say, you and me, now that those two units that you and I bought have been taken out of the overhang. But let's say we put that property back into the market for sale. Those two units actually come back into the market for sale.
And those units that you or me have put back in is not calculated as an overhang. So it doesn't appear in the statistics of an overhang property.
That's right. It has disappeared. It's disappeared under a line that we've drawn.
How about offices? Because, you know, with CMCO and work from home encouraged, a lot of offices have emptied out. What kind of observations have you made in this sector?
Well, a lot of offices haven't emptied out, just to correct you. There may be less people working in those offices now, but those occupiers of office space are still occupying the office space. Perhaps when they decide to move or their expansion plans may be kept on hold, when tenancies come up for renewal, they may give up some space. But I've also heard some officers talking about they might now need a little bit more space because of the social distancing, where they could usually cram X number of people. Now they have to, you know, take on a little bit more extra space for that same X number of people. So I think in the long run, it may balance out.
Before this all happened, there is a kind of incoming supply of office spaces, especially in the Klang Valley. You know, we've got the TRX, yes. We've got Menara PNB, all due, some already finishing completion, some probably finished completion next year. So we're going to look at a big supply of office spaces. How does the stagnation and the supply, the incoming supply of office spaces meet each other? Are we going to be seeing a big jump in numbers of available office spaces out there?
Yes, yes. We will see a jump in numbers of available office space. Occupancy rates are hovering at about 80% or slightly lower than 80%. I think that will go down a few more percent in the next year or two as more supply comes into the market. But what we've seen happening, and there's real evidence to suggest this, what we've seen happening is that a lot of the office space vacancies are in the older buildings. See, what's happening now, Sim, is as newer buildings come available, and because supply is higher than demand, rents haven't really grown as much as we predicted or projected it would. So occupiers in older buildings are now being given opportunities to move to newer buildings at rents which are still relatively low. So what we've seen is the older buildings emptying out and the newer buildings filling up. So when you say there's a vacancy of 20%, it's not every building 20%. Some buildings are 100% occupied. Some buildings are only 30% occupied or 20% occupied. So we're finding a bit of an exodus from the older buildings into newer buildings. In the previous years, in the last 4 or 5 years, what we've seen is some of these older buildings have been repurposed. Usually, they've been repurposed to become budget or business class hotels. And they have been relatively successful. So the repurposing, the reuse has proven successful. But unfortunately now with this COVID pandemic and people shying away from hotel rooms, business travelers dwindling to almost nothing, it would be a brave man who tried to repurpose one of these older buildings.
Okay, moving on to another sector, the commercial sector, retail space and malls. Again, before the pandemic, there was a lot of talk on, you know, especially in Klang Valley, that we have too many malls. Who are going to these malls? And now with what has happened this whole year, how has it been for these commercial spaces?
The retailers have taken a bit of a banging. Just when it looked like they were recovering, there's this new second wave, or I don't know whether it was a third wave now. And the retail malls have emptied out again. So it's very difficult now to make a judgment call on what will happen to retail.
Do you think malls will close?
I think the bigger malls, the more established malls will be okay. They'll ride it out. People will come back. We are social animals, you know. We will continue to go to the malls and we will continue. As soon as the scare is a little bit subsides, you know, or a little bit abated, I think we will go back and do the things that we used to do. So they'll just have to hang on. My biggest worry is the smaller, the second and third and fourth tier malls, which even before the pandemic have already been suffering. And what I've seen happening, and I've predicted this some years ago, I think many of these less popular or less famous malls, I think will eventually slowly turn into storage areas, you know, wholesalers or storage areas more likely. And that's already happened to some of the malls. I'll not name them. Many of the shop fronts are actually sort of boarded up and it's being used to store carpet, clothes, textile, anything.
So like become warehouses.
It become quasi warehouses. Yeah.
All right, and we're going to take a short break for some messages. Don't go anywhere. Stay with us, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're tuned into The Property Show on The Morning Run. I'm Sim Wee Boon, and with me today is Siva Shankar, CEO of the real estate agency Arm4 Rahim & Co. International. We are talking about the property sector and what his expectations for Budget 2021 is. I want to talk a bit about developers. In your conversations with all the property developers out there, what are the specific pain points that they've been having this year?
I think the developers have been having the same pain point for a few years now. I think they've been talking a lot on compliance costs and how compliance costs has become a big portion of their total costs, you know. And I think they've been talking to the authorities about finding ways to reduce the compliance
costs. How big is this of a percentage? Is there a kind of like a figure that you have off the top of your mind? I know it differs, but you know, maybe perhaps like you could give me like how big exactly is it?
Oh, really? I'm not really very sure, but I think it could be anything from 20 or 30%.
Okay, okay.
From what I read, but you know, I have to give you a caveat that I'm not sure.
Yeah, no problem.
So that's one thing that they've been talking about. The other thing, of course, they've been talking about is the fact that in order to sell 10 units, they have to actually sell 20 units because 10 units then drop out because they don't get a loan or the loan not enough. So buyers eventually drop out. So I think these were some of the concerns. But I myself have another concern, which I think is real. And I think we should find a way to address this. See, from the time the developer buys a piece of land or identifies a piece of land to the time he actually launches a product, it could take 1 to 2 years. Because, you know, the sale of the land takes a long time to complete. There's all sorts of approvals, and these approvals sometimes take months and months. And then he's got to submit his drawings and his plans and everything for our further approvals. So by the time, from the time he decides, yes, this is a great piece of land, I think I can buy this land and sell this product, to the time he actually sells the product, the time lag is so long that particular product may now no longer be feasible. But the developer is committed already. He sunk money into it. He's committed. He's got to go ahead. And that's probably one of the reasons why sometimes you see them launching a product which they already know is oversupplied, and yet they still launch. And you wonder why. So if we could shorten this time, if we could make this time shorter, more efficient, then perhaps we could take some of that uncertainty away from the market.
And how about home prices and all? Did that change throughout the CMCO timeframe?
We've seen some prices go down a little bit. I've personally seen some sales where the seller was prepared to, you know, go down by 10 or 15% from more 10 or 15 or 20% from what he originally thought the price could sell, the property could sell, but you must differentiate transacted prices from asking prices. Yeah, asking prices to me is a reflection of nothing but the seller's greed and ignorance. Yes, you're either greedy or you're ignorant, and you have placed the property in too high a band with the asking price. Because what you've done is you've listened to some dubious, so-called dubious property investment guru who gave you some dubious advice 2 or 3 years ago when you first bought this property, and now you're stuck with it. But you put it into the market at some inflated price, which you have been advised to do. And then you find nobody buys it. Then you drop it by, you know, 20 or 30,000 and still nobody buys it. Then you drop it again. Then you drop it again. After a few months of trying, you've probably dropped your asking price by 100 or 200,000 ringgit, right? And now the general public looks at it and says, oh, the market's fallen by 30%. But actually, the market did not fall at all. It's just that your asking prices came down by 30% because your asking price was 30% inflated in the first place. So the market is just now finding its own equilibrium. So eventually, let's say you was trying to sell a property for 900,000 and then you couldn't find a buyer, and then you dropped it and dropped it and dropped it and dropped it and finally sold at 700,000. That 700,000 could well have been the open market value at that point. So your price did not fall, your asking price did. And that's a big difference, Sim.
So is this applicable to new properties? It sounds like this happens in sub-sale, but I mean, what you're saying applicable to the new properties that are being launched or new properties that we have as well?
Well, unfortunately, there are cases where sometimes when you're buying a new property, your price is also inflated because you've been given a lot of freebies. And nothing is free. The price of those freebies have been adjusted and put into the selling price. So you may buy a property worth 500,000 ringgit at 600,000 ringgit because you've been given 100,000 ringgit of freebies one way or the other. Okay. Nothing is free. It's as simple as that. Nothing that you get for free is free.
Which is exactly what contributes into the home affordability problem, right? A lot of Malaysians can only afford a specific band, or they only can afford a specific price house. But what we're seeing is more and more homes being built and sold at a much more higher price. So this mismatch, this affordability issue, how do we reconcile that? Especially with what you just said. I mean, you know, even despite the freebies and everything, it still sounds like some or many homes are out of reach.
I think how you regulate that is you regulate that with good enforcement. You see, if you look at all these advertisements that appear on social media, Facebook and everywhere else, you can see many times people saying, cashback guarantee, buy this property and receive cashback. I've been offered cashback up to 100 over 1,000 ringgit. So, which means what? I don't know what it actually means. They say cashback guarantee, 100% loan. How do you get 100% loan? No bank will give you 100% loan. So how do you get 100% loan? I'll tell you how you get 100% loan. You buy a property for 700,000 and then you go and apply for a loan of 600,000 and then the bank gives you a loan of 600,000 and then you get 100,000 back in cashback guarantee. So your real price is only 500,000. I'm not saying that that's what is happening because I really cannot prove to you that this is what people are doing. For that, you need to go and do your own investigations. But I cannot see any other way around how this is happening. So how do you regulate this? Number one, you need to regulate these prices. You need to be able to determine that those are the prices. The banks need to be careful about the lending, about the quantum that they lend. And more importantly, I believe a lot of these dubious deals are being offered by these so-called property investment gurus who sell to their investment clubs or to people who are ignorant. And these are nothing but get-rich-quick schemes, really. Really, to me, it's like a scheme cepat kaya.
But I'm still seeing some houses going for $600,000, $700,000. I mean, and these are homes that are trying to be that are marketed towards first-time homeowners or young adults, which, you know, statistically we know can't achieve that $600,000-$700,000 ringgit band. You know, they probably can only afford $300,000 to $400,000. So do the developers have a responsibility in terms of pricing their property? Are they pricing it out of the expectations of the market?
No, look, if the developer prices it out of the expectation of the market, then it's the market's fault for buying it in the first place. Why would you buy something that is priced out of the market? You shouldn't. And if nobody did it, then nobody would overprice their property.
Okay, let's move on to the budget. What do you want to see in budget 2021?
There is very little we can do right now to soften the impact of COVID, right? I mean, COVID is COVID. But what I think maybe the government can do as far as the budget is concerned, I think we need to try to do more for first-time home buyers. And to me, if you bring DIBS, you know, Developer Interest Bearing Scheme, this is what we had, which is very popular a few years ago until the government banned it because it was overused and abused. If we structure it properly, if we regulate it properly, the DIBS is a very useful tool for first-time home buyers, at least, because what they can then do is during the 3 years of construction, they don't have to pay, they don't have to repay the interest. So that's the money they would save, which they could then use to pay rent for whichever place they're staying. Otherwise, they'll have to make two payments, rent still pay, interest payment to the bank also still pay. So the DIBS is a good tool that can help first-time home buyers to at least own their first home. I'm not saying bring it back in totality. I'm saying consider bringing it back for first-time home buyers. That's one that they can do. The other one, I think the home ownership campaign and all that it entails is a very good initiative. I don't think it will be as successful as the first home ownership campaign. It will help. It will help when you give people a bit of moratorium on their loan documentation, a little bit of discounts on their stamp duty, blah, blah, blah. So every little thing helps. Perhaps we also want to look for the banks to maybe be a little bit more understanding of first-time home buyers and be a little bit more relaxed towards first-time home buyers, at least, you know, to give them the opportunity of buying their first home. I think one of the things we need to do is to get rid of the RPGT and go back to what it used to be. The RPGT is a tool that was put in place to discourage blind speculation in real estate. So I believe if we go back to the previous RPGT rates, which becomes a zero after the fifth year, I think it'll be a feel-good factor for the real estate market.
And that's all the time we have for today's property show. That was Sivashankar, CEO of the real estate agency arm for Rahim & Co. International. I'm Sim Wee Boon, signing off for the morning run. We've got a 10 a.m. news bulletin coming up next, followed by Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
The Property Show on BFM 89.9, the business station.
This BFM Budget 2021 special was brought to you by Masing.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.